than other things. But right now, it's just hard to see what's there. Do you see what I'm getting at? Could you turn on the nonverbal a little bit? Okay, good, thanks. I need that confirmation. So what I would encourage you to do in your groups is a variety of things. If you're sitting there with just a phone and you really can't do much editing, then go ahead and... hang on, let me do this. Then just go ahead and read some links. You know, read some of the links you didn't get to, because knowing what's there is kind of the name of the game. If you are sitting there with a laptop, and especially if you're a little more familiar with some of the links there, what I'd like you to do is edit the page and kind of do more of what I was doing. So just to show you that in edit mode, what I would do is I would click, if I were doing this with someone else, say in a group, I would take, look, Tito's here, right? This is you, right. So you, and by the way, if it's your post, let's just assume if you're in the class, you work on it, right? You know, so I would take your name, put it to the end, and then I would, you know, that's a, I can already tell that's a Seattle Times article. So I would try to put a bold tag on that that kind of said what that article was going to tell me. That way, when I'm looking through the page, I can start to say, oh, that's another article on that. Or that's an article I haven't seen before on this aspect. So what would a good tag, you've seen this one, what would a good brief phrase in bold be for this one, you know?
Budget cuts on the poor.
But,
yeah, I'd say budget cuts for the poor, because it's talking about how they're taking budget cuts, and then the private sector is going to kind of provide the funding for the poor, but they don't think that that will actually fill the gap.
Yeah, good. So something similar, short phrase like budget cuts for the poor in bold, And then we'll get the page kind of in better shape. And then there's a second step, which we might start doing with the next section, where we kind of move links around and kind of put them under headings and so on. So, but we don't need to do that right now. So could I ask you to get in groups, browse links, edit links, depending upon where you are in this process and what you brought with you to do that with. And if you're just going to sit there and browse links, you might still be in a group with somebody and help them come up with a tag to edit that. Okay, can we do that for 10 or 15 minutes just to kind of help you get your heads into the content? And so if nothing else, you're reading links and thinking about its relevance to your project. Maybe what I could do is kind of get us into a couple of small things. You know, I thought it was kind of cool that as I was browsing through this, I was noticing some things that connected with our reading. So for instance, you notice when you, in this article from Newsweek, you're starting with, you recognize that from the Singer reading, right? The case of walking by a shallow pond. And you'll start to get connections here. Several of you posted things that gave Singer's view in a nutshell. He's been widely reported, so his views are kind of easy to digest in a summary fashion like that. So you'll start to see connections of things. You'll start to see names appear over and over again, famous people in debates. But I wanted to kind of give you a little direct presentation on them and then kind of get us back into groups with a kind of a different purpose. It's just give you kind of explore some methods that philosophers use to kind of go take the next step. But this is in a sense one of the hardest things to communicate is how do you give an ethical analysis? So let me ask you to take a few notes on this. And then we'll see if we can relate it and I'd like you guys to, you know, this is participatory. I don't think this is just direct instruction. So let's see if I can make this real participatory. So your paper topic prompt is there, right? That's going to be your challenge for the paper. I think we're talking about 2 to 3 pages max, maybe 2.5 pages. So it's going to be a short paper. So already you're going to have room to give lots of reasons, but you're not going to have room to give lots of background information. So this is, make first note I'd suggest is, this is not a research report. Your job is not to synthesize everything on the wiki page at all. You don't have time for that. You don't have room for this. Your job is to answer this question, and that's what I mean by a position. For a lot of philosophers, you have a philosophical position when you understand the basis. Let's to kind of talk about this together. The basis for an obligation and the extent of the obligation. And often articulating the basis of the obligation, this is kind of the point I'm making here, often articulating the basis of the obligation helps you understand the strength of it And in thinking about the basis of it, you should be thinking about some of the ways that the theories we've studied kind of key on some of our moral intuitions about virtue, happiness, harm, rights. So you don't just pick a theory and say, okay, I'm a virtue ethicist, so this is my answer to the question. But you might find in thinking through the problem that, you know, you could discover something about your moral motivations. Like, for you, what are the reasons? If there are any reasons for helping other people, what are you pulled toward? Do you think fundamentally we have an obligation to help people be able to live a rational life, right? In which case, you're not so much concerned about the suffering itself, you're concerned about this idea of what a human life is like and what the quality of that life is, even if it has some privation in it. So notice already, if you locate that as an intuition, you're not so much focused on alleviating human suffering. You think there's something maybe more valuable, like being able to plan a rational life. But you might be focused more on harm. You might see helping the poor as part of a way to express virtue, and making what's involved in making it a virtuous experience. So you've got these considerations like moral motivation, which is kind of at the basis of a lot of your analysis. But then you've got to kind of figure out the strength of the obligation. And I've already said a few things about this. For instance, you might say that there's no obligation, in which case it has very low strength. You might say that there's no obligation, but I'm running through some options that I've added a few options to this, what I gave you last time. You say there's no obligations, but it's a good thing to do. Like, you're not obliged to do it. Can we think of some examples for that, by the way? Because as you're doing your paper, as you're getting your position together, I want you to be thinking of examples that you already have some settled intuitions about. So is it obligatory to ride your bike to work? Is it a moral obligation for everyone? You wouldn't make that argument. So no. Is it praiseworthy? Okay, can you think of two or three things that fall into that category? Just take a minute. No rush. Things that are morally praiseworthy but not obligatory. Yeah.
Maybe if you're at the grocery store and the person in front of you can't afford to pay for the groceries, you pay for them.
Yeah, right. A kind of specific act of generosity in a particular situation. Or, you got me thinking of another example. That you probably got other people thinking of the example.
Oh, I was just thinking the pay it forward that Starbucks does, like, during the holidays.
Yeah, right.
Or, I mean, Starbucks doesn't do it, but people do.
Yeah, ways for you to kind of engage in a spontaneous altruistic act. But you would not turn to your friend and say, you have to do this. You know what I mean? You'd say, well, that's nice, you're doing it too. That's great. Right? Good.
I'm actually a landlord and a homeowner.
Okay.
And so I have tenants.
Yeah.
One of my tenants has lost his job just yet again.
Uh-oh.
At the same time, I'm willing to give him the chance to get back on his feet without just booting him out flat out.
Absolutely. So good. That's
I'm
a very good type
to
of
do
case.
That.
Right, good.
But, yeah.
So places where you go beyond... places where you could assert rights, but you maybe you don't. You get it. You decide to be generous, right? Okay. What would be a reason for thinking that our obligations to, well, maybe that's too big a question. So suppose you're drawn to that. You kind of feel like, wow, helping people in poverty, that's probably a good thing to do, but I don't feel comfortable telling someone they have to do it, right? So think about the parallel arguments you make when you're in similar situations, like, the examples that we were given here, you know, she doesn't have to do it, she doesn't have to cut this person some slack, but she's going to, right? So another way to get in a position is to say, well, you're not really obligated to fix people's poverty, but you might have other obligations. Suppose poverty, we find out, and it's true, right, that along with absolute poverty, people often experience other kinds of privation. They have lack of access to medical care, and you might decide that they might have a lack of access to education. So you might look at the UN Millennium Development Goals, and you might say, you know, well, what I'm drawn to, what I see as obligatory is helping with this and this. For instance, you could develop a position where your only obligation is emergency famine relief. You see the point of that? You could say, well, we're not really obligated to help people have better lives. We're just obligated to be there in a crisis. You could make a perfectly consistent and really good position out of that if that's where you're coming from. Another way to get at your position is to say, people should feel this as an obligation individually, but it's not the kind of obligation I can say that we have as a society. Okay? And that's a huge, you'll notice in the literature on the wiki page, there's a lot of literature that gets at the distinction between individual giving, individual charitable giving, and government aid. Government aid is massive compared to individual charitable giving. So you might look at that and you might say, wow, what does that tell me about my position? If individual charitable aid can't be effective, if it's too small to be effective, yet I think that's where the obligation lies, how do I work out that tension? You see how as you explore your position, you wind up trying out positions and then seeing if they have problems with them, right? You might have an impulse to say, well, it's not a government job, but then you might look at this data and you might say, well, then it's not really going to get done. Is that okay? I mean, there are some things that aren't communal obligations, and if they don't get done, you might say, well, that's the way we leave it. So then you might be comfortable with the best we can do by obligating people individually. Can anybody suggest a principle that helps us distinguish when something's a communal obligation and when it's not? Imagine that like an alien landed here and said, how do you decide which things you're going to force people to pay for? Right? Because remember, the libertarians worried about that. Libertarians worried about situations in which you don't get to choose what to do with your resources, right? So how do we decide that? How do we decide that defense is something that you just have to pay your taxes to? Schools or something you just have to pay your... If my neighbor doesn't want to pay for schools, I just tell him... I don't tell him anything. No, I wouldn't say anything. Let somebody else enforce the law. You see what I mean? But if my neighbor doesn't want to go the extra mile and join my campaign to tidy up the neighborhood, it's an individual obligation, right? I can't tax him. So could anybody help me figure out a principle for... Because how do you decide when something's important enough to say, this is a societal obligation? You should recognize this obligation. I don't care if you want to do this. This is part of your taxes. You see the point there?
Maybe something that will cause physical harm to one or multiple people.
Yeah, I mean, some people make national security arguments for alleviating poverty. You could say, for the same reason we're going to force you to pay for the tanks and the aircraft, we see this as part of our national security. You know, so I mean, I don't know if that would be your argument, but yeah.
I'd say it represents a certain standard of living for that specific society.
Yeah. You could say, tell me where you're going with that, because you would need another argument to say, just because we have this standard of living, we should help other people have it. Is that where you're going?
I guess so. Yeah. So like, defense is our biggest thing. That's right. Like our standard for our country. So that's
good.
Why
good.
We help other countries with their defense as one of the prime things.
Right. So you might say we have a general obligation to help the world. Come up to our standards of living. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Others? You could say, well, it's an important enough job and it won't happen individually. Like, you know, why do we make people pay taxes for roads? Well, everybody needs roads, right? But if we just did a private collection, well, tolls are kind of a way to do that privately, I guess. You know, if you just did a private subscription for people to pay for roads, it wouldn't work, right? Not enough people would see it as in their interest to help with all the roads that need to be repaired, right? So the point for your notes would be, think about ways that you already make distinctions between different kinds of obligations. How do you put something in the praiseworthy but not obligatory, individually obligatory but not communally? How do you do that? So one good thing about developing a position on ethical issues, it helps you develop the coherence of your ethical worldview, right? Okay, a few more details now. I'm going to get you into groups and maybe try to talk with each other a little more concretely about how your position might be developing. I think we're still in the position developing stage. We should do a little timeline work and figure out the deadlines. We don't have any deadlines for this. Let's make sure we do that. I'll do that. I'll work on that while you're in this next small group thing. Okay, I realized as I was getting ready for class today that a lot of you, because I was looking at the posts on the wiki, and I noticed some of the posts were saying negative things about charitable aid and that versus development aid, right? So charitable aid would be something like the Red Cross. TechnoServe is like an appropriate technology, private foundation that's doing. Bill Gates would be in that category. So aid, there's direct aid where you're giving people cash or goods directly, and then there's development aid where you're making investments in a society's problems, to solve a society's problems, whether they're food or justice problems or education problems. So the point for your notes is we're using aid as a shortcut here. We're not just talking about aid. We're talking about any form of assistance. Let's make sure, I'll put that in your notes and I'll tell you why I think that's important. We're not just talking about aid, direct or otherwise. We're talking about what is our obligation to provide any form of assistance. It might be going to hold somebody's hand while they starve. No, I'm kidding. A little gruesome. No, but there's lots of other kinds of assistance that you can offer people. For instance, you might believe in trade versus aid. There are a lot of business-oriented, development-oriented people who are very humanitarian-oriented people, but they'll say very negative things about charitable aid and donors, private aid, because they'll say, look, the most important thing is to get people's economies going. Remember I told you last time, most people in the development community would say economic development lifts all boats better than most forms of aid. So real quick, though, the point for your position is a complete position can't just be about whether we should give aid or not. You see why? Because there's other forms of assistance. You could say, I'm against aid. There's a lot of very intelligent, highly educated, reputable people who are against aid. But they're very much in favor of trade. They think we should be actively trying to do business with the poorest people on earth because they are convinced that that's what's helped people the most, is economic development. It's very hard to make that happen, but where it's happened, you don't have to keep coming back every year, right? Questions about this? I'm trying to open up the topic in a way, give you an idea of what your options are, but also, go ahead. Sorry, I made you wait.
So, assistance, can we just talk about, we just believe that we assist in, vaccines or something? Like, we, have a duty for our world to keep everyone vaccinated but not give money or anything.
You could say, look, in-kind aid of this sort is the highest priority for me. Alleviating health-related human suffering. Maybe after that, education is your highest priority. And if you locate that, then you might kind of figure out that might also help you see what the basis of your position is, right? Yeah. Others? Okay. Okay. The step that you might be at would be between locating motivations and developing a position is to actually try to put principles to your motivations. So if you're motivated to alleviate human pain and suffering, how does that relate to a principle about aid? Do you prioritize emergency relief in that case? Why do you prioritize some kinds of suffering over others? What's your goal? What's your goal in helping people? So I'd like you to come out of this next group experience with at least some trial balloons of a position. And you might find that you and one other person in the group kind of are agreeing about how you're thinking about it. It may be two or three different positions, but I'd like you to come back from So I'd like you to try to help each other deliver positions and question each other about your positions. And what you're trying to do is really figure out two things. What's the basis of the obligation? What is it grounded in? What should the motivations be? What are the value priorities? And then what does that basis tell me I ought to do? Or what does it tell me I ought to argue that my society ought to do? Okay, could we just kind of do this for about 5 or 10 minutes, see how the discussion goes, and then I'll kind of just come back from that and see how you guys are feeling about the project. Because it's trivially easy for you guys to help alleviate major human suffering. So it's not an anguished decision, oh my God, I need the job to feed my family. It's not a hot box crisis situation, according to Singer and according to Sachs. It's not quite chump change, but, you know, $100 billion swings in the discussion every day in this country. You know, so getting to 0.7 GDP. But that doesn't mean you're obligated to do it. Just because something's easy to do doesn't mean you're obligated to do it. Good. Thanks for helping us get there. Others? This is hard to do. Could you try to express why it's difficult to do this? Or maybe you're not. Maybe you're comfortable with where you are with this. I don't know. Could some people just articulate some of their positions? Yeah.
I also think that it's difficult to say because of like the situation that we're all in. Like we all go to a private institution that believes in social justice.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's people in this room who probably chose to come to this university because mm-hmm. they believe so much in this.
Sure.
So if you look at like our class in general, how
sure.
we all like poll on this, it's probably a lot higher than what the national average would be.
Absolutely. One of the learning outcomes for the course is to encourage you to think about communicating to a diverse audience. And one of the things that you guys are in a position to do as relatively among the most educated people in the society, right, is ask yourself, now this isn't about how my position, it's about how I'm gonna argue that how others should feel. So whether you're, even if you think you don't have, I take your point. I don't think it's gonna be a big surprise if a large majority of the papers argue that we have some obligation to help people in absolute poverty. The suspense isn't whether, you know, and you're welcome to argue that we don't, right? So, but true to form, Gonzaga students, true to form, you guys are going to come in with a large majority of papers probably saying that we do. The interesting thing philosophically is why? What's the basis of it? Because if you don't know the basis of your obligation, you really don't know how to act. You don't know where to act. For instance, suppose you decide that it's both an individual and communal obligation. You know, so it's not satisfied just by encouraging the federal government to collect taxes. Suppose you believe that, you know, there's a moment for personal virtue in helping alleviate poverty. And so your position will include a compound obligation. Not only are we obligated as a society to help people in absolute poverty, but I should be doing something, right? You know, that's a very robust obligation. So what I'm interested in is more, I'm happy for you to argue for whatever position, actually, whatever conclusion you feel from, you know, across the range, from no obligation to very strong obligation. The interesting part is going to be how you define that obligation, what you base it on. And until you start trying to articulate it, you know it might be hard to see what that's going to involve. For instance, if you appeal to rights, you know you still have a range of positions from libertarian to Kantian, right? So the Kantian argument. The Kantian argument was that it's irrational to deny yourself aid. So even if you have this live and let live attitude behind your rights view, you still have to figure out whether you're a libertarian rights theorist or you're a Kantian rights theorist. And that's going to make a huge amount of difference. It'll help determine other views that you have about ethics. Okay. We might leave it here. I don't know. I'm not sure where we are. Oh, let's talk about dates a little bit, okay? So.